So I don't know if you all were at the debate last night, but here is our question, and we're going to have a poll on it. So if you don't remember how to do the poll, you want to go to the conference app. Stop looking at Facebook. Go to the conference app.
And then what do you do?
Then, yeah, you find the debate on the schedule. It's today. Scroll down. You're going to see live polls. And then click on this poll, which is about fighting about vaginas. And then vote. And while you guys are doing that, let me introduce our incredible debaters. Our debater in favor of the motion is Carolyn Mitchell, MD, MPH. She runs a vaginitis referral clinic at the Mass General Hospital and is an assistant professor of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive biology at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Mitchell received her BA from Harvard College in Women's Studies and then spent 2 years in the Peace Corps in Southern Africa prior to returning to Harvard Medical School for her MD. She did her residency in obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Washington, where she also received her MPH. Dr. Mitchell spends the majority of her time doing translational and basic science research on the relationship between the vaginal microbiota and the reproductive mucosal immune response at the Vincent Center for Reproductive Biology at the MGH. And our debater not in favor of the motion is Jeannie Marazzo, MD, MPH. She is a professor of medicine and the director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. She is internationally recognized for her research and education efforts in the field of sexually transmitted infections, especially as they affect women's health. She's a fellow of the American College of Physicians and of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Dr. Marazzo is the chair of the American Board of Internal Medicine Council and also chairs the ABIM Infectious Disease Specialty Board. She conducts research on the human microbiome, specifically as it relates to female reproductive tract infections and hormonal contraception. And her other research interests include the prevention of HIV infection using biomedical interventions, including microbicides. Recently, Dr. Marazzo led the VOICE study, a large study evaluating... But the VOICE study is so great.
It's okay. Everybody knows.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll stop. And you probably voted by now anyway. Okay. Let's see what happened in this poll. I'm sure everybody has very strong opinions. Right? Should be booting up.
Ooh.
All right. This
excellent.
Is kind of as I thought.
This could go either way.
It could go either way. So you guys, the pressure's on.
All right.
All right.
I'm super excited to be here to talk to you about bacterial vaginosis, which is where I make my livelihood. I'm less excited to be up here against Jeannie, who's one of my mentors. And my only consolation is she's worried enough about our debate. She's wearing a suit. So I'm feeling like I have some hope. And thanks to the 40% who are on my side. So as you know, bacterial vaginosis is a vaginal syndrome of an odorous discharge that is characterized by the absence of vaginal lactobacilli and an overgrowth of a diverse community of vaginal anaerobes. But this is not just fishy discharge syndrome. BV is associated with increased risk of HIV, other STIs, preterm birth, miscarriage, and infertility. So it's appropriate treatment and diagnosis and treatment is a real public health concern. And yet, our diagnostic criteria for BV, the gold standard in the clinic, is the AMSLS criteria, which requires 3 out of 4 of discharge, elevated pH, a fishy odor upon the addition of potassium hydroxide to vaginal discharge, and the presence of clue cells on microscopy. What that means in practice is that you have this slide, and you're one glove on, one glove off. You're walking down the hall to the dirty utility room, and your microscope, which is dirty and doesn't really focus. Really? Really, the microscope? So there's got to be a better way. And there is. The non-microscopy point-of-care tests. pH, which is, in fact, one of the AMSLS criteria, and lactobacilli, present in healthy people, not present in women with BV, lactobacilli make lactic acid, which makes the vagina acidic. So acidic vagina, alkaline vagina is a really excellent divergence point for diagnosis of BV. But there's more. The whiff test. So the addition of potassium hydroxide to vaginal discharge results in an amine or a fishy odor produced by my two favorite amines, putrescine and cadaverine. Also your friends. And then the awesome sialidase test, the BV Blue. Awesome. Like, what a great name for a company. Awesome. CLIA waived, so totally able to do in clinic, takes 10 minutes, and looks for the presence of sialidase, which is an enzyme produced by Gardnerella vaginalis. So these, I will argue, are far better and are totally sufficient for the diagnosis of BV without the hassle of going down the hall to the microscope, which most people don't have anyway because of all the CLIA requirements. And point-of-care tests in a women's health clinic are not a new idea. UTIs are far less common cause for visits to outpatient clinics than vaginitis. But the urine dip we use all the time. The MA does the urine dip. It's ready for you when you go in the room. You have half an answer. So why not use something like pH? Your MA could do this for you. The patient could self-collect a swab, and it would be ready for you to go in and have a conversation and sufficient to help you diagnose BV. So what does sufficient mean? Sufficient means that you can provide a patient with an accurate, quick, reliable, high-quality, and correct answer. It does not necessarily mean this is the only test you will have for this disorder, nor that in every case this will be the test you go to, but it is sufficient. Again, the urine dipstick we don't use all the time, but it is sufficient. BV. So we're going to talk about BV and all of the data I'm going to show you about the performance of these non-microscopic point-of-care tests will be based on the research diagnosis of BV, which is a Gram stain-based diagnosis. So looking for the presence of different morphotypes on a Gram stain. You say, well, that's not what I do in clinic, but the Nugent score, or this Gram stain diagnosis, is what has been associated in epidemiologic studies with the poor reproductive health outcomes associated with BV, and so I would argue is the appropriate gold standard when evaluating tests that we're doing to diagnose a condition we want to treat to avoid those poor reproductive health outcomes. And then point of care, easy, fast, simple, quick. It is not the BD Affirm. It is not any of the molecular tests out there. It is something you can do in clinic and provide a patient a result right away. So if we look at the different components of the AMSLS criteria, discharge in blue, pH in red, amine odor in green. The left-hand side bar is our sensitivity, right-hand is our specificity. You can see pH has pretty great sensitivity. Amine odor has good specificity. If you add the BV blue, which is the sialidase-based test, the specificity there is really excellent. The sensitivity is not great, but it's about the same level as the AMSLS criteria, which I think my opponent is going to argue to you is the gold standard. Not really that great. So BV Blue, or this sialidase test, was not around when the AMSLS criteria were being developed. So the AMSLS are a combination that provided better diagnosis than any one component on its own, but now we have this additional point-of-care test that is easier to use, I would argue, than the microscope. So what if we do a combination? So here, blue is our AMSLS criteria, and again, left-hand side sensitivity, right-hand side specificity. If you do pH plus amine, not as good, which is why that's not the AMSLS criteria on its own. The BV blue plus pH in green there actually performs better than the AMSLS criteria in both cases, and overall seems to be your best choice. The BD Affirm, good sensitivity, not great specificity. So again, this is a test that I see a lot of people order in the community. I would argue a point of care test gets you a better answer in a shorter amount of time, and you can give the patient treatment and an answer right there in clinic, which is exactly what you want to be able to do. So my opponent is going to argue, but microscopy. But you get to see what's going on, and a picture is just worth so much more. Well, it turns out that picture is really blurry, and people don't know how to interpret it anyway. And people aren't doing it. So in this study by Harold Weisenfeld from the University of Pittsburgh, in women who were referred to a vaginitis clinic. So clearly there was a vagina problem. They went back and looked at the records of those people, and in the 150 visits prior to the referral, microscopy was not performed 42% of the time. And 95 to 97% of the time, no one did a pH and a whiff test. So these point-of-care tests, the good ones are not being done. Microscopy was being done probably more than anything else. So fine. Was microscopy helpful? 25% of the time, people gave inappropriate treatment based on that microscopy, suggesting that people did not know how to interpret the microscopy. And my opponent is going to say, well, but microscopy, you can see trick, you can see yeast. Well, you guys know you can't actually see trick half the time when it's there, so trick is off the table. Yeast, well, in this study of 535 military women, experienced providers looked for yeast, said these people had yeast. Half of them did not just have yeast, they had something else. So microscopy interpretation is a problem. So I don't think microscopy is going to be our answer. And to go on further, clue cells, which are the hallmark of BV according to the AMSL criteria, when you Google clue cell, you get all of these images. How many of them are actually a clue cell? Just one. And when you look at inter-observer or even within the same observer with a light microscope, the kappa value for agreement is terrible. People are terrible at interpreting microscopy. So microscopy is not going to do it for you. These other tests are better, and I would argue are sufficient for the diagnosis. So pH, pennies. Pennies to do this test takes seconds. The whiff test, same thing. Awesome test, $19, 10 to 15 minutes. Granted, we have 10 minutes for a visit, but it's 10 minutes. You'll be done by the end of your visit. And a quick, effective diagnosis for a woman who is in your office worried about her vaginal discharge, priceless. Yeah.
Well, as Dr. Mitchell noted, I was once her mentor at the University of Washington, and I'll just say that it's such a bittersweet experience to see your young grow up in all their defiance and naivete. So, this is my premise, that use of non-microscopic BV point-of-care tests are not sufficient for the clinical management of BV. Dr. Mitchell's argument essentially relies on the tenet that perfection is the enemy of the good, hence her willingness to settle for what she calls a sufficient test. In fact, she attempted to overwhelm you with data about the POC test to make this point, and in the process, insulted your skills as laboratorians and diagnosticians. The other point I would make is that sufficient is not good enough. I have a vagina, and it expects perfection every time. So here's the crux of my argument. No microscope equals no AMSL criteria. AMSL criteria is the real-world gold standard, and in real world, it may be superior to the Nugent score, and we'll talk about that in a moment. I love debates because I get to use these phrases that I don't use in everyday life. Microscopy provides the sine qua non of BV, which are clue cells, abundant bacteria presumed to be the defining anaerobes. I would hope that you're not Googling to figure out what a clue cell is, FYI, as an aside. It also does, contrary to Dr. Mitchell's nihilism, provide information on other relevant entities, pseudohyphae, yeast, parabasilar cells, atrophic vaginitis. How about that, Dr. Miss Vaginitis Clinic referral person? The pH is actually quite helpful. The negative predictive value is really good. On the other hand, the positive predictive value, not so much. As we know, it doesn't distinguish between trick and yeast, and there's a big difference in how you're going to manage women, both in terms of the medication and in partner management. So my basic premise is that without microscopy, there's no good point-of-care test for vaginitis, and a bad point-of-care test simply reinforces that it's okay to manage vaginal complaints with syndromic treatment, which is an uninformed and unsatisfactory approach that is the standard in settings with limited health care resources, i.e., most of the United States. And simply, vaginas deserve better. So is the fishing good enough, and what would an ideal diagnostic test for vaginitis be? We would like it to identify BV, trichomoniasis, VVC, or the absence of all three. Now, we're only talking about BV here, but really, you really do need to know about all of these tests, and there is not a point-of-care test that's going to help us with this if you don't use a microscope. A sufficient test may confer good sensitivity and reasonable specificity, but women presenting with vaginal complaints, as I said, deserve better, and that's in part true because, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, most have already been self-treated or been inappropriately treated for these complaints, further complicating the situations. What is the perceived benefit of self-treatment? Why do women use things to treat themselves instead of coming to see us and have our imperfect tests applied to their vaginal fluid? Convenience, ability to initiate therapy quickly, perceived empowerment of women, and then reduction of healthcare costs. Nice review from over a decade ago now. Sort of posited that we save a lot of money when women don't bother coming to get checked out, to get their tests diagnosed, and themselves diagnosed and accurately treated. Although this analysis didn't account for the consequences down the road, just the savings when they didn't show up. What about self-diagnosis? It really is terrible as well. This was a great study, and I love it because of the methodology. Darren Ferris and others did this at five centers, and what they did was to actually get study coordinators to intercept women who were in line with vaginal over-the-counter products at various pharmacies. And they invited them to come to a vaginitis clinic. You can imagine that this was not very well accepted and taken up by the potential participants, some of whom felt somewhat targeted by this invitation. But they did manage to get 94 women to enroll over 2 years, and the bottom line is that the women who were buying antifungal therapy over the counter would have been inappropriately self-treated 61% of the time. And in fact, 38% of these women had BV, and of those who had BV, 19% had VVC and 19% did not. So it's a complicated picture. The real question we're dealing with here is how desperate are women with vaginal complaints? They're pretty desperate. If they're willing to do anything to get anything over the counter, or if they're desperate enough to avoid going to the physician, then that really says a lot. And I think this really tells the story writ large, which is that we have had very, very poor attention to vaginal health in the world, but especially in the United States, where you may not know it, but the FDA only requires that you get cosmetic-level approval for anything that goes into your vagina. So intravaginal products get the same rigor that the shampoo that you use on your hair, or your pubic hair, for that matter, actually gets. So it's a really kind of the Wild West in there. These are some of the offerings which encourage shotgun treatment and syndromic management, and I have actually seen practically all of these in my clinical practice, including garlic, which was a big favorite in the Pacific Northwest for BV. The Onion actually really explained this very well, as only The Onion can do several years ago, and this was an article about the female parts. And you can see that the vagina is basically just a black box because people don't want to think about it, they don't want to know about it, and in fact they call it the further inside part. I think that's actually pretty accurate. Okay, so back to the gold standard. The gold standard does require microscopy, and the gold standard to which AMSL criteria is compared is the Nugent score. That has defined the BV endpoints associated with adverse outcomes for decades. The AMSL criteria is the best surrogate for the Nugent score, and it could be argued is even more relevant for clinical evaluation, largely because you get the component of malodor, which is very predictive of specific anaerobes. So let's take on the Nugent criteria, and I'll do that by just reporting to you one very interesting study that Sujatha Srinivasan and David Frederick's lab with our group did. And this was actually comparing the results of Gram stains by Nugent score, or with Nugent scores, to some of the molecular analyses that David Fredericks talked to you about yesterday. And what Sujatha and her colleagues showed was that the bacteria that we typically called Mobiluncus on the Nugent score, which actually gets you to the highest worst Nugent score of 9 to 10 and is associated with the worst clinical outcomes, was actually often confused with something called BVAB1, which again was mentioned yesterday in David's talk. This slide just shows you how well these two things could be confused and how easily they could be confused, and that means that you might be giving women Nugent scores with the completely wrong microbiologic composition that was used to develop the score based on cultivation studies in the first place. And this is how similar these two bacteria look. And they're very different bacteria. They're probably acquired through different anatomic niches and may even have different pathological entities. So the curved gram-negative rods that we call Mobilunculus that are required to get you a Nugent score of 9 to 10 are actually more likely to be a different bacteria. So even the Nugent score in this area of more era of more sophisticated microbiologic characterization is probably incorrect. Can we envision a point-of-care test that does approximate a better Nugent score? And I do think we will get there. This is from another paper from our group led by Sujatha. And in this paper, she used a very sophisticated mathematical bioinformatics model to look at the components of the EMSL criteria, so pH, whiff test, clue cells, and vaginal discharge, and then look at the contribution of each of these bacteria detected through these molecular methods. And it turned out that right in the center there are two bacteria called Leptotrichia amnionii and Egerthella, and very close, Adapobium and Gardnerella. So these are bacteria that are very consistently associated with three or four components of the Nugent score. So you might imagine that a point of care test someday, unless you go down Dr. Mitchell's Luddite road of throwing out the microscope and the sequencer and God knows what else, could actually provide a specific diagnosis of VV. I will rest my case there.
Dr. Mitchell, don't let her get away with that.
You know, the Luddites don't have it all wrong. Sometimes simple is better. Point-of-care tests in a women's health clinic are a really familiar thing for us. A simple, easy, quick answer for women and their vaginas is often exactly what people need in a moment of anxiety. And really, I'd like you to do any point-of-care test. Microscopy is so logistically challenging for many people. Many clinics don't have a microscope, and a lot of women just get diagnosed without any tests. So please, let's use the good point-of-care tests. Let's not rely on the microscope. Let's use these tests that are totally sufficient for diagnosing BV. But let me reiterate, sufficient does not mean the only test. Again, the urine dipstick for uncomplicated women who are coming in with complaints of dysuria, urine dipstick is great. For women who have a higher risk of complications, who have other risk factors, you might go ahead and do a culture. Diagnosis of BV is the same. If the person is in your clinic for the fifth time in 3 months, you're not just going to do a pH and a sialidase test. But if it's, you know, once a year, pH and a sialidase test together are going to give you a totally sufficient answer and are a totally appropriate and reasonable test that will provide this woman what she needs and will help improve her reproductive health. So the molecular tests. Now, I know you're affiliated with a really excellent molecular biology lab. You know, the ivory tower was brought up yesterday, and sure, it sounds great. But so what I see on the ground in the vaginitis clinics is I could get my answer for pennies, or I could pay $800 to $1,400 for the molecular tests that are out there now that purport to give us a much better answer, when it's really the same answer. Are the lactobacilli there, yes or no? Are the anaerobes there, yes or no? I can tell you that without, you know, paying the $1,000. You can give that to me and I could go to, like, Jamaica, please. So, do you really need a fancy test with bells and whistles, loaded with jalapeno peppers and mayonnaise and fried onions? Or is a simple, quick, reasonable test sufficient for helping women treat this very distressing problem and providing an answer that they can take home with them and you can provide them treatment right then and there?
All right, well, here's what I say. Pennies for an incorrect diagnosis still gives you an incorrect diagnosis. And let's not even consider what that incorrect diagnosis may incur. Think about getting recurrently treated with metronidazole gel for your incorrectly diagnosed recurrent BV, or the alternative, the curse of perpetual enforced abstinence from alcohol, metallic tates, and lifelong oral metronidazole. What a nightmare. I can't even imagine. You know, and also, the things that people find out about vaginitis are really amazing. This is something from People magazine, actually. You may have seen this. And these are the kinds of tests that Dr. Mitchell is actually advocating. I'm surprised that she's not quoted, actually, in this ad. This is a test for Vagisil screening. And you know what this is? This is a pH test, basically. So, you know, it's just really distressing. So I think that we should revisit microscopy. The value of a beautiful saline microscopy prep is priceless. It can avoid inappropriate treatment and provide a specific diagnosis when used as part of the AMSL clinical criteria, which I still stand wholly behind. And besides, what's wrong with bells and whistles? This is the grizzly polar bear at Travis's Chicago-style Polish and Bear Burger in Birmingham, Alabama. And I have learned, since I have moved to Birmingham, Alabama, that people like their food with a lot of bells and whistles. So I encourage you to take a look at this blog. It's actually one of our ID faculty who maintains this blog. It's called What to Eat in Birmingham, and you'll find a lot of really cool stuff there. And I will just finish with this picturesque slide to make my point that BV is a very important problem for women. And I will stop there. There you go.
All right, so let's see if hearts and minds have been changed, shall we? Can you vote? Give you just a couple of minutes. Think of hot dogs, putrescine, underpants, all of our fun slides. All right, you think we're ready? Everybody voted? No?
No.
Still scrolling? All right. I mean, with these arguments, it's just not that difficult a decision, right? Think we're ready now? We got it? All right, let's see. And we got... Hello.
Music.
It's thinking. Ho ho. Oh.
Where's the mic? I gotta drop the mic.
Oh my. And the crowd goes wild. All right. Well. Well, we have a few minutes for questions if Dr. Marazzo can stand it.
To say.
I know, right? I think we do have a question.
So despite my microbiology training, BV is not really something I ever think about until I got a phone call from my sister a couple months ago. And I didn't know what to tell her. So, since we have a couple experts up there, what should every woman know about discharges and their treatment?
So what every woman should know about discharge and their treatment is that you need to be seen by a physician or a provider of some sort, because self-diagnosis, as Jeannie pointed out, is terrible. It's very different than a urinary tract infection. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that while BV, trichomonas, and yeast are the three most common causes of vaginal discharge and vaginitis symptoms, all of which have treatment and diagnostic criteria, in a good 30% of people, we don't actually know what causes symptoms. And this is a plug for all of you, that research and understanding about what's going on in the vagina is lacking desperately, because there are women who are incredibly distressed, who really have something going on, and they're given inappropriate treatment over and over and over just because we don't have a test that can give them their diagnosis. And that is our failing. And we are completely failing the female community in the U.S. and around the world because we don't understand the vagina. But really the message is you really need to be evaluated. Please don't accept treatment over the phone. Get someone to take a look. Get someone to look in a microscope or with an appropriate test, because that's how you're going to figure out what's going on.
And I would just add a couple things. One is that in the line of sort of know your own body, a lot of women really don't know that having malodor, fishy smell, is not normal. because they get really used to it. And that is something that I think is a really good educational point. It's really not normal to have that odor. And the other thing is, I think the effects on sexual function and sexual satisfaction have been really understudied. Sort of embedding some of these messages in the sexual health framework is really an important thing, and I don't think we've really gone there yet as women's health providers and as STD specialists.
Thanks. And if I may, do you have some favorite sort of myths? Like, my sister's a bit hippy-dippy and really loves Dr. Google, and I kind of had to explain that, no, you don't get yeast infections from beer and bread. So,
right. Do you want to go first?
You go.
So common myths about the vagina, that yogurt will cure everything. No, it does not. And the thing about yeast, so everyone thinks, oh, I should take it. Everyone comes and says, oh, I have yeast over and over, but I've been taking a probiotic. And you guys probably know this, but the majority of the time when you diagnose yeast, what are the bacteria there with it? They're lactobacilli. So this idea that probiotics, which are lactobacilli, are going to help you with yeast, they kill the yeast in the lab, but in vivo, they absolutely do not. So don't take the probiotics. Please don't put yogurt or garlic or tea tree oil or any of that stuff in your vagina because it hurts.
Right.
And it's not effective.
Yeah, and the other really important message is don't douche with anything. So douching for odor is a big problem because you want to be fresh and smell fresh because you don't feel that way or smell that way. And then you douche and it just makes the problem worse because you're washing out the little lactobacilli that are desperately trying to get a hold and regain their ecosystem.
Thanks.
Any other questions? We have time for one more, if there is one. No?
Right on.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.